Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, he might be a mensch, but he's definitely the author of Workbench. See what I did there? John Bissett is our guest on TWRT today. He's talking about a lot of tips and tricks and important things coming up in the next few days that you got to pay attention to. It's next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By the Ruby console from Lavo, see Lavo and your future at lavo.com/twrt. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by the Calrec Type R console system. Type R is a brand new, modular, expandable IP-based radio system from Calrec Audio. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And this week, I am so glad we've got people travel literally hundreds of miles to hear John Bissett talk, and we're bringing him to you on our show today. In fact, John's going to be a bit more of a regular on This Week in Radio Tech. We promise to bring him to you at least three and maybe four times a year, and heck, more if we can get him. I'm Kirk Harnack. I work for the folks at the Telos Alliance, and I'm in the Telos Alliance studio here in Nashville, Tennessee, where I usually am, although for the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be out of the studio. We'll be on the road next couple of weeks, and I'm not sure where we'll be, but we'll be somewhere, and we'll bring you the show from wherever I am at that time. So there you go. Without further ado, let's bring in our guest, John Bissett. John, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech.
Hey, Kirk, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to see you. And, you know, we work together for the same company, but you have a life that you've had for years outside of the Telos Alliance, and that is you write a column for Radio World. And tell us what that column is about.
It's Workbench, and pretty much everybody knows about it. Anyone in broadcasting, we've had hundreds of people supply information on the different topics that they've come up with. It's basically a nuts and bolts column to give folks an idea to how they can improve their efficiency as an engineer. So things for them to check on, things to keep maintenance rolling along without always putting out fires, things like that. And once in a while, some funny pictures like animals in the transmitter site, that sort of thing. Snakes in the transmitter, you know what I'm talking about. You can identify to that, right?
Bats in the belfry, yeah. Actually, we've got some great rodent tips. We got some great rodent tips, but the show's not just all about rodent tips. Some of the tips that John passes along, you know, just bypass if they don't apply to you. Don't try to apply everything. But once in a while, and actually more than once in a while, I hear or come across a tip or an idea or a technique that John presents in Workbench, and it just fits what I need to a T. And hopefully during the next hour, we're going to bring you a whole bunch of tips, and some of them will be exactly for you, and they'll help you out. Hey, I want to tell you, our show is brought to you in part by Josh Bone and my friends at Max Connect. It's maxconnectwireless.com. It's spelled funny, so if you want to go to the Max Connect Wireless site, you're going to have to type it in or click the link in the show notes. That'll be in the show notes on YouTube or on the GFQ Network website or on This Week in Radio Tech's website. What is Max Connect? Well, look, for years, we in broadcast have been having to deal with the fact that it's hard to get wired phone lines, wired equalized lines, even just wired phone lines or DSL lines to the places where we need to do live remote broadcasts, whether it's a football game, a parade, a live remote from a car dealer, or breaking news. Well, one of the things that's been difficult about using your cell phone is you're never sure if you're going to be getting the data rate that you need to get good quality audio through. And, you know, it may test just fine, but if you're at a ball game and a whole bunch of fans show up and all of a sudden, you know, they whip their phones out after a big score or at halftime, you've got a problem that all the data, the cell site may be overloaded. Well, Max Connect is different. With maxconnectwireless.com, you get data that's guaranteed for you. The only users of a cell site that have a higher priority than you would be first responders. And so as a commercial business using Max Connect Wireless, if you're paying for 5 megabits per second, guess what? You get 5 megabits per second up and down. And that's plenty to do audio. And actually, it's enough to do video, like we do the show sometimes here on This Week in Radio Tech. So whenever we're outside, whenever we're on the road, well, Chris Tobin or I use Max Connect Wireless now, and we've been having much better success in getting our show and our data to you. Check it out, MaxConnect Wireless.com. Max Connect Wireless. All the plans are there for the amount of data. You can use it for backup STL for a transmitter site. You don't have to use it for remotes. It's great just to put in place and use when you need to. So check that out. Thanks a lot to Josh Bone at MaxConnectWireless.com. All right, let's see. I'm here with John Bissett. Almost had a senior moment, John. Glad you're here. And let's see if we can go ahead and jump into a couple of tips. And by the way, if you're listening only to This Week in Radio Tech, you're going to miss some of the pictures. So we do have some pictures to show to help emphasize some of the points that John is going to be making. But John, start where you'd like with some of your tips for better engineering. Go right ahead.
Okay, great, Kirk. I think probably the first thing to point out is, as you had mentioned, not everyone needs all of these tips. You might find something that would be useful. But what I find with a lot of engineers is they say, oh, everyone knows that. You know what? Everyone doesn't know that. And that's where yes. It becomes really helpful. Even for seasoned engineers, they'll tell me, you know, I saw such and such, and I never thought about doing it that way. So, you know, if you have an idea, please send it along. You're not only helping yourself out, but you're helping other engineers out, and your published submissions become helpful for you in recertifying with the SBE, with their certification program.
Wait, what?
So let's start. Well, wait a minute. Yes, sir.
What if I submit an idea to Workbench, I can get SBE credit?
Yes, you can, because it is a published tip. So it's just a little extra that comes along with it. So, yeah, it's a good idea.
That's one of the things I really like about your Workbench column is that you give credit where it's due for every single tip that comes in. And I think, I mean, what a blessing to have that. If I send you a tip, you would give me credit, and you give credit to people all the time. These are not all your ideas. A lot of these are people submitting an idea to you.
I'm just kind of the facilitator for it, you know, putting everything together in the column. So, but yeah, it really is dependent on all of the readers, and we really do appreciate that. So, Kirk, one of the things I wanted to talk about was talking about pests at the transmitter site. This is the type of year when bees are going to start circulating around and looking for a place that's warm. A lot of the temperatures are going down, and they're going to be trying to find places to nest or to overwinter. Important for us to get out to the transmitter sites and to check in for that, making sure that there's not a problem. But, you know, it's not only the bees, but also other animals and insects, things like that. I don't know if we've got a picture here for the picture of the bees' nests or not. But
I had a picture from the mouse. Okay. The mouse magic, which I think is the third or fourth picture. And there you go. I've never heard of this. What is mouse magic?
Well, this is really pretty cool. There's a guy, he's passed away, but his son's taken over the program. He's a gardening expert. His name is Paul Parent, and he does a weekly broadcast on Saturday mornings out of Maine. And the broadcast is a couple of hours long, gives gardening tips. Well, one of his tips was this mouse magic. So I went ahead and bought some of this stuff. It is really amazing. They're little packets that have a sweet-smelling pine type. I don't know if it's actually pine needles or if they're impregnated with the pine smell, but they smell great. You stick them in your garage and it smells like Christmas time. So anyway, you lay these around in your transmitter building and they deter any kind of rodent, mice or other rats, anything like that. They do not like the smell of this stuff. And they last for a couple of months. You get, I believe if we can see the picture again, I think there were two or four packets in each box. And, you know, you just go ahead and sprinkle those things around, actually just lay them around your transmitter building. And it does a great job of keeping the mice and other rodents out of your transmitter building.
So, John, I've got a technique that I have used for years, and I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just lucky and I don't have some of the pests and other vermin and insects around. But for years, I have put mothballs in little baskets, mm-hmm. little plastic baskets at the transmitter site. And you know, they evaporate over time. So every few months, right. I'll go out and put some more mothballs out there. Now, some people really don't like the smell of mothballs. My wife is one of them. However, I'm kind of weird. I like the smell of jet fuel, you know. So the smell of mothballs actually doesn't bother me. And we seem to have very few troubles in our transmitter sites in Mississippi. I mean, the middle of bean fields and rice paddies and cotton fields, we seem to have very few problems with vermin inside the building. Have you had any experience with mothballs?
I have. Before I started using the mouse magic, have used mothballs. Those work real well. And you know what else they will discourage? Is snakes, which I'm sure you've got a lot in Mississippi, right?
We do. We do. And by the way, that brings up another technique. Maybe plenty of engineers do this. I mean, I've done it ever since I was surprised by a snake right overhead in the rafters when I went in. Or other times I've opened the door and there's been a swarm of wasps right there. Whenever I go to a transmitter site that is not visited very often, I will, and at all my sites, the door opens outward, right? It doesn't open inward. It opens outward. Mm-hmm. And I will unlock the door, and I will open the door and step back and just watch for anything mm-hmm. to happen. I mean, is there a bear in there? Probably not. But is there a swarm of bees? And I'll look around the door jamb. Right. To see is there anything around there? I'll look at the floor to see if there's a snake on the floor. I'm not saying I'm like a SWAT team, but I'll go in and look left, look right, look up, look at the rack, which is usually pretty close to the door within a few feet. And I'll just look and see if anything's in there that I don't want to deal with. Same thing if I'm opening, you know, the case on that's usually on the side of the building or on the tower that holds the tower beacon flasher, unless, you know, it's a strobe system with the stuff maybe indoors or more sophisticated stuff. But when I open those things, I'll open it and stand back and just watch. See if anything, you know, if anything doesn't want to be seen or doesn't want to be bothered is in there. So, sorry, I didn't mean to take a minute from your show.
No, That's a good point. And, you know, your idea with the door swinging outward, taking a can of hornet spray and just kind of spray around the frame of the door to prevent them from nesting, you know, over the eaves of the building. Same thing with the transmitter air intake. You want to make sure that the bees or the swarming insects are not using that as a hotel. So a good idea to do that.
One of your things you want to bring up, and we're going to take a commercial break here in a minute, but I want to talk about lock lubrication, because I've heard lots of different stories about lock lubrication. For example, WD-40, which we all carry with us or have nearby typically, is not really a lubricant. It's a water dispersant, and it may not be the right thing to use. Some people spray white lithium grease. I've always thought that could collect a lot of dust, but I could be wrong. What's your feeling about lock lubricant, especially when, you know, you got a multi-user site, as so many people have now? Some have pretty smart arrays of smart ways of dealing with locks. Others just have a whole bunch of locks all in a row, and it's a little bit of a pain to deal with, especially if somebody does it wrong. What's your feeling about locks?
I think probably the simplest, Kirk, is using just the graphite lubricant that you can squirt in there. I've seen the sprays. I've used the sprays before. Those have been okay. The issue, again, getting prepared for the winter, is just to make sure that your locks are going to unlock when you stick the key inside.
Gotcha. I have seen some transmitter sites where we have we've cut a piece of a tire or an inner tube and stapled or screwed or nailed that to a post. Anyway, we've kind of covered the lock from getting hit with moisture, so it won't get wet and freeze. Do you find that's a problem in some places, of a freezing lock?
Yeah, it is, and that's a really great idea, because you can cut a piece of inner tube rubber and actually loop it over the lock, so it acts almost like a shield around it, and prevents water from getting down inside there and causing things to freeze up. So, yes, I've seen that before and have done that as well. I think those are both very good ideas.
I think you do have to be careful, though, because in the summertime, you may find that insects like to nest up under that tire or inner tube. It's a nice warm spot. They may, and it's dark, sure. Darker. So they may actually like it, like the eaves of a roof. Let's hit one more. And I know we hit on air filters quite often. I don't have that picture available for you of the air filters. But what's a rule of thumb about air filters? And by the way, thankfully, at every one of my transmitter sites now, and we got a bunch of them, every one that I can think of, we have a closed system. So we're never drawing outside air in, which in the South is laden with moisture. And that moisture has a high amount of heat, latent heat in that moisture. So we did a calculation. You know, Mike Patton has been a guest on the show before, and we have calculated depending on the environment, but typically across the humid South of the United States, if you compare the cost of running air conditioning 24/7, 365 versus the cost of trying to cool outside air down somewhat before you run it through your transmitter, the cost is really close to the same thing. You'd think it'd be a lot higher to have a closed system, but that air coming in from the outside not only is hot, but it's moisture laden, and that means that it contains a lot of heat in it.
Exactly.
That is expensive to cool that down, even just a few degrees. But I'm sorry, back to the air filter topic. And having closed systems, you don't have to change the air. The air filters don't get very dirty. Now, they still do, but not like they do when you're sucking in, you know, dust and dander from a bean field that's outside.
Oh, yeah, really. And Kirk, I think one of the important things there with the closed systems, and people should consider that, we're not getting to the transmitter sites as often as we used to. If you're able to get there once a month, you might be lucky, especially if you're the sole engineer. If you're a contract engineer, you may not get called until there's an emergency. So what you want to do is set your site up so that you can get the most out of it with the fewest number of trips, just to save your time. So going with the high efficiency air filters are a great idea. And as you prepare for old man winter, getting the air conditioning filters changed and the transmitter filters changed are a really good idea to do that right now.
Great. Good deal. And keep a stock of them on hand. Boy, if you buy air filters in bulk, they certainly can be cheaper per each one, and leave that box of air filters at the transmitter site. That can really be a
Kirk, that's
saver.
That's really a great idea, because the single air filters, yeah, you can go ahead and pick one up in an emergency. But if you buy them by the box, they get down to pennies on the dollar compared to the single price. And, that way you can buy the high efficiency, better air filters, but get 20 of them at a time, save a lot of money. And that's something else I'd like to point out. When you do that, show that to the general manager. Explain to your manager that you are saving him money. You're not just spending him or her's money with everything that you're doing. You're saving money and saving the station, keeping the station on the air. I think the biggest problem I've run across with engineers is we just don't toot our horns loud enough. And it's really important to let the people above you, the managers, the owners, so forth, know exactly that you are taking care of their facility. You're doing a good job with it. And here is an example, one more example of how you're saving the station money and you're keeping it on the air at the same time.
Indeed, that box of air filters may cost $40, $50, $60, but you compare that with going to Home Depot and paying anywhere from $12 to $25 a piece for air filters
for each
one at a time, individually wrapped for your protection. You know, you don't need all that. I've got here at my house, I've got two furnaces, two air conditioning systems, because this used to be a duplex. We knocked the wall out. And I have to buy two different sizes of air filters for the two systems. And yeah, I buy them by the box. And you know what? Each box lasts me a couple of years. So, you know, what does it matter if that box costs $55, $60? It's going to last me 2 years. Hey, John, we're going to take a quick break for one of our sponsors. I want you to participate, though, John. Do you recognize this thing, John?
I do. That makes an engineer's life so simple.
That's right. This is a genuine.
That is an XLR dongle, yeah. Right?
Yeah, you can call it a dongle. I think their actual word is a cable because the Studio Hub brand has adapters and they have cables. And so these are cables. So what I'm holding up, in case you're not watching the video portion of our show, this is one of the famous Studio Hub RJ45 adapters or cables. This one's a female RJ45 wired in the Studio Hub standard internally. It's got a couple of high quality audio shielded audio cables here. And this one terminates in a couple of XLR connectors. They're color coded red and green. Red is right. Green is not right. It's left. Here's another one that is RJ45 to female. And to those of you who have used Studio Hub adapters and cables in the past, you know how good they are. And you know how easy they make your life when you're wiring or rewiring a studio, when you're troubleshooting. My goodness, these things are terrific. Because what do? You use these along with a patch cable, an RJ45 patch cable. And here's a little 1 foot patch cable. You can buy these for well under $1 on the internet. And so if you've got gear that is close to, let's say, an Axia X node, and you want to wire it in, or if you're wiring to maybe even an older radio systems audio console, anything that uses the Studio Hub standard on an RJ45, you just wire it up. There's a great story that Dan Braverman tells about how and why he invented the Studio Hub standard. But John, I want to show you something else now. You kind of know what this is in my hand, right?
Absolutely.
It's an Ethernet cable. It's a 7 foot patch cable. It is shielded. It's got the shielded connectors on it, and the cable itself is shielded. It's Cat 5e cable. It's absolutely certified for analog and digital audio connectivity. It even on the package gives you the pinout in case you forget it of the Studio Hub standard. And you know what? You know what you pay for one of these nowadays? Nothing. That's right. Nothing. If you call your favorite dealer or go to angryaudio.com and you order one of these cables, for every one you order, just ask, you'll get a free 7 foot patch cable. That's from Angry Audio. Angry Audio now makes Studio Hub. Yes, yeah, Studio Hub is back. And if you've used Studio Hub, you know how convenient it is and how well made the cables are. If you haven't used Studio Hub, here's my tip for this moment. Do it. It will save you hours of laborious work. It'll save you almost all of your soldering. I built a studio a few months ago in Indianola, Mississippi, which is about as far from a Radio Shack. Okay, I realize most Radio Shacks are closed. It's as far from anything convenient as you can possibly get, Indianola, Mississippi. And I rebuilt a production room in one day. And I did have to pull my soldering iron out to do a couple of RCA connectors. And I should have had one of these with RCAs, and I forgot to order them. Ugh, shame on me. But that was the only thing I had to solder. So thanks again to Angry Audio, angryaudio.com. And cables aren't the only thing they have. They have a whole line of gizmos. And if you need parts for any of your old radio systems gear, like Millennium consoles, they've got that too at angryaudio.com. Hey, we'll be right back after this word from Calrec.
Calrec Type R is a modular, expandable IP-based radio system featuring three slimline panels, a fader panel, a large soft panel, and a small soft panel, easily configured to give the operator full control. Layouts are saved and recalled quickly between shows. A single 2RU core with integrated I/O gets customers up and running fast, and that single core can power up to three independent mixing environments with no sharing of DSP resources. Available in four DSP packs, and as your station grows, larger packs can be added, enabling it to grow with you. Power to the surface is supplied via standard PoE switches, keeping cabling to a minimum. Type R is fully AES-67 compatible, as defined by SMPTE 2110, which means that it is also compliant with NMOS discovery and connection management specs. All these features combined make Type R the most flexible radio console you can buy. Find out more at calrec.com/twert.
Thanks a lot to CalRec for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. CalRec.com/twirt will get you right to where you want to see. All right, it's Kirk Harnack along with John Bissett here for episode 466 of This Week in Radio Tech. John Bissett is regaling us with a whole bunch of tips. John, we should just cover a whole bunch of them right now. And so, hey, if you're listening, get your pencil paper ready or hit the rewind button if you need to, because we're going to go through a whole bunch of these tips right quick. John, take it away.
Sounds real good. Kirk, one thing I'd like to pass on to the viewers and listeners, if you haven't gone on to YouTube and enter in a DIY mousetrap, you need to do this. You will be amazed at the ways people have thought up ways to catch mice. Some of them not so nice. One guy was using a stun gun that he had wired to a cage. That's the craziest thing you ever saw. But, you know, and another fellow, he had a bucket with a little lever that was moving back and forth that the mice would crawl across. But he had it done in an area where there were rats. There must have been 50 rats in that bucket. And I don't know where in the world that would be. But, boy, can you imagine the transmitter site with that kind of a problem? It would really be a problem for you. So, anyway, just kind of fun to take a look at what you find there on YouTube with ways to get rid of the rats if you don't want to just use mouse traps. So you were talking about getting ready for old man winter. Let's look at some tips here. I think it's a good idea for us to make sure that all of your locks have been lubricated. They've all been inspected. Also check your hardware on the locks and fences. Make sure that all of that is in place and tight and not loose. The last thing you need is to have an emergency and not be able to get into a tower fence because of the lock being frozen or the hardware being jammed. Good idea for you to double check on your generator. I'm sure your generator is going to be tested, exercised periodically under load. Be there when it happens at some point so you can see exactly what's going on. Make sure that everything is fine there. Fluids are filled. Just a lot of simple things like this. And, you know, if you have an assistant or you have someone who is in programming who maybe does your remote setup and is interested in broadcast engineering, bring them along with you. You know, they can learn. And a lot of this stuff, once they get the hang of it, they can do a lot of your site inspections for you. And if he sees something that doesn't look quite right, get back in touch with you. That'll save you the time from going to all of these sites. Good idea for you looking at taking care of an emergency where you get stuck at the transmitter site. Kirk, has that ever happened to you?
You know, I years ago, I was kind of stuck on a mountain in East Tennessee. Yeah. So, or East Kentucky. Yeah.
So what we want to do, we want to make sure that there is a supply of water, some foods, maybe some energy bars, something like that. All of those should be put sealed in a plastic container of some sort, like the big bins that you find at Walmart. They only cost $10, and they could save your life. A couple of other things that would be really helpful is to have a first aid kit that's stocked. Batteries, if you need those, a phone charger, some sleeping gear. Maybe like a couple of blankets, a pillow. The point is that you never know if you're going to get stuck on a site like that. And if that happens, you just want to make sure that you're prepared for it. I don't know if you've got this picture.
John, I would say the blanket's a great idea. We don't so much probably need those in the South. We can, you know, walk out of our transmitter sites in the middle of a field. But I've been to sites where walking out would be a tough thing, and staying overnight might be a better thing. But if you're going to put a blanket there, put it in one of those plastic containers that you can seal up so that vermin, mice, and whatever don't get into it. And that's the same place where you might put a gallon jug of water and your energy bars and things like that. That would be the good place to put put your blanket or sleeping bag. At the same time, I would mention what we've done at all of our transmitter sites. And thank goodness my business partner, Larry Fuss, has actually been the genius behind this, the executor behind this. He's went and got just a cheap toolbox, like probably from Harbor Freight. I mean, literally a $5, $6, $7 plastic toolbox, and filled it with cheap tools. So they don't cost a lot. But you know what? If I forget my tools, or they're back in the truck, or the field is muddy, or whatever, we've always got two or three screwdrivers, wire cutters, wire strippers, some pliers, some wrenches, a voltmeter. We've always got those things at the transmitter site.
It's a really good idea. Yeah, that is. You know, something along those lines, too, you're talking about the blankets, a space blanket, you know, the aluminum foil blanket, just to give you some warmth. If you get stuck there and you've got to stay warm, it's a good way of doing it. What I was going to mention, I don't know if you had this picture or not of the vest, the heated vest.
Yes, there it is.
These things are fantastic. Milwaukee makes them, but there are a number of companies that make them, and they are really kind of controlled with a little switch that's built into the vest. You press that thing, and there's a series of batteries that heat filaments within the vest coat itself and keeps you nice and warm. This tip came out of Alaska. So, you know, it's one of these things where it gets really cold up there, and they really do need to have a way of staying warm, especially if they have to work outside. And this is a good way of going about doing it.
One thing that you have in your list is a bottle of Purell. I've never thought of that. Tell me what that's about.
Well, you know, sometimes we get our hands dirty. We get a lot of junk all over us, and a lot of these sites don't have running water. So this gives us the ability to clean our hands, especially if, say you slip and you cut yourself or something like this.
Oh, yeah,
the first aid kit comes in real handy, but being able to clean yourself up is a good idea. And I think that's where that would come in handy.
Great idea. Yep. I should do that. Okay. That's on my list now. Bottle of Purell for every transmitter site.
And, you know, Kirk, I think another thing would be the flashlight, talking about having an emergency light source. I don't know if we've got a photo of that or not. But,
yeah, we do. We've got two photos of the same thing here, this one and the next one. I think I had two photos. Maybe not. But that's the one you supplied right there.
These things are amazingly bright. And, you know, the other thing that I like about it is they're LEDs, so they're not using a lot of power. It's an amazingly bright light, but you can drop it and the bulb doesn't break.
Oh, yeah.
John, how many trouble lamps have you dropped?
You know,
how many trouble lamps have you dropped, Kirk, over your career?
Yeah, I have.
And it always happens. And it's the last bulb that you have, right?
Yeah, so it sure. It's the only bulb I have on the transmitter site. Yeah. I got to tell you, sometimes you can get lights like you just showed there for free or for just a few dollars, like at Harbor Freight. But even if to pay full price for them, we went camping recently with my son's Cub Scout, and my wife stopped and picked up a few supplies. She picked up a welcome mat for the tent, and that was such a nice lady touch, you know, to have a welcome. But you know what? We got less junk in the tent walking into it each time. So that was good. But what I was going to say is she found some little hang-up lights for inside the tent. But what I was going to get at is these LED lights these days are so bright. And if you get them, a lot of times they have a magnet on the back of them and a pull-out hook. And this is really helpful. Now, it has nothing to do with transmitters, but we've got a dishwasher here at my house that the strainer that's in it does not self-clean. And I have to take the dishwasher apart every few months and clean this strainer out. Otherwise, the dishwasher gets clogged up and doesn't run the water around inside properly. Well, it's really hard to see down in there. I mean, there's no light in the dishwasher. So now I take this cheap from Harbor Freight light, and the dishwasher, ours is stainless steel inside. It's steel, and so you just magnetically hook it to the lid, to the inside of the dishwasher, and bam, I've got all the light that my 57-year-old eyes need to successfully take apart and put that back together. I got to tell you, lately, I haven't done so much transmitter maintenance. We've got a couple other people who do a lot of that for us, but lately, I mean, the last few years, we've needed less transmitter maintenance than when we had mostly tube transmitters. Now it's about half and half for our operations. So I guess my point is I haven't needed as much light, but when I do, it's great. And I know you've got another lighting tip coming up that I'm eager to hear about.
Absolutely. Let me talk to you about security with regard to lighting, actually lighting the outside of your building. If you're not using LED lighting, very important for you to do that. One other thing with the Ring security that's out there now, those cameras, very inexpensive. And if you don't have a budget for it, here's something for you to consider. Buy the camera housing and mount the camera housing, and then take a little piece of cable and loop it around and have it go inside the building. They'll never be able to see inside to see that there's not a camera there. But the phony camera housing, if you don't have the budget for a full video system, is enough to dissuade people from coming around and fooling around, messing around.
Well, that actually brings up another tip that I don't think was in your list, and we should do a whole show on this sometimes, and that is video cameras at the transmitter side. Of course, to monitor them or to playback, you're probably going to need internet at the transmitter side. So one of my tips is make friends with a wireless ISP if you have transmitter sites that are not, you know, available to DSL or cable or fiber. Or, of course, you can do the IP radio thing. We have some sites where that's how we get our internet out there, is by IP radio. But you can buy these cameras from Wyze, W-Y-Z-E, and there's no annual fee because they're not storing anything. But these cameras can alert you on audio or video motion if you like. They'll store audio and video on the camera, and you can remotely access that. It's only a couple hundred kilobits per second for the quality of video that you see. You can also have, at least the Wyze brand, they will listen for the sound of a smoke alarm. So if you have a smoke alarm at the transmitter site, and I guess not everybody does, maybe a different kind of smoke than a cooking fire. Anyway, the Wyze camera can alert you with an app if a smoke alarm is detected going off at the transmitter site. So that's pretty cool. And they have outdoor housings for the Wyze cameras too. They're Wi-Fi, so that brings up another point. Put a Wi-Fi hotspot at your transmitter site. You can turn off the SSID. You can make the password really secure. You're rarely going to use it, but you may have some devices that are Wi-Fi only, like a Wyze camera.
Really great idea. Those are all very useful. I think that's really good. And don't think that just because it's a security system that you can't afford it. The things that you're talking about are proof positive that it's something that you can make happen for your station.
Those Wyze cameras, by the way, are $20 if you go to the WYZE.com website. I happened to purchase about a half dozen cameras before Wyze came out with their cameras, and I got some super cheap deal. Yes, probably the Chinese government is also looking at our transmitter sites, and I'm not sure I mind that. That's okay, but I joke. But I happened to buy some cameras from a company called, I guess it's pronounced GoodGo, G-U-U-D-G-O. They had, you know, all these alphabet soup companies, right? I bought them for $22 a piece. They're pan tilt zoom. I hang them upside down from the rafters of the transmitter building, tell it that the camera's 180 degrees turned around, and I've got transmitter sites now that I can easily remote with an app or on the web. And they'll alert, if there's unusual, motion going on there too. I'll shut my mouth.
No, I think that's great. No. Those are all great ideas. Hey, Kirk, I wanted to mention too, you've used a butt set in your lifetime, right?
Yeah. In fact, I've got one I'd love to sell. It's in the next room. I put it on eBay. Nobody wants it.
You know, that's the, I won't say it's a problem, but it is the only problem with AOIP, is that you can't go ahead and hook a telephone butt set across a terminal and listen to what's there, see whether or not you've got audio or not. And I wanted to take a quick second to talk about the X Selector, which gives you the capability of doing that. This is an Axia product. Yeah, okay, good. I'll go ahead and get that up. And there we go. It's an amazing little box. The six little push buttons can be preset for specific locations within your network. The knob on the right side is a scrolling knob that allows you to scroll through every point in your network. So every source can be listened to or watch. And then what's even neater is there's a front panel headphone jack with the volume control on the left. But in the back, you can actually run speakers to this, and you can feed audio into it. So this not only works as a selector node, but it also works as a an input and output node to get audio in and out. So if you've got an AOIP facility and you don't have one of these Axia X selectors, it's a really neat idea. They're only a couple of grand. They're very useful and something that I think engineers, you know, again, would be able to use. It'll save you from running from the control room to the rack room back to the control room just to listen and see whether or not you've got audio on a source that is coming in, say maybe a Comrex source or a satellite source or something like that.
That is a great idea, and a lot of stations that are using audio over IP have such a thing as that, and the Axia X selector is perfect for that kind of thing. And as you said, it also has an audio input there, so that's helpful. Along those same lines, John, at my stations, I use the Telos ZipStream software to encode audio for, you know, distribution over the web of our radio stations. Well, we bought an extra input license, and I use that to where I can remotely listen to anything at my radio stations just by going to the IP driver and selecting it from there. I also installed some software that's a quick button selector. So yes, there's a delay, usually 5 to 10 seconds or so, but I can remotely listen to any of the Axia Livewire streams. They're encoded down to a reasonable bit rate and sent out as an AAC stream, but I can listen even on my phone. I can monitor this also allows something else. You know, we use, at some of my stations, we use Livewire to send audio to the transmitter site. Well, we have an IP radio link there. Might as well send confirmation audio back to the studio. So back all of my studio. Audio processors, all the audio processors, not only, you know, their composite output feeds the FM transmitter, but their analog left-right outputs feed back to an Axia X node, and that brings audio back to the studio. So if I can remotely listen to audio that came back from the transmitter site. And if that sounds good, well, guess what? It's working. So
very good, Kirk. Yeah. And that's really a neat idea. In fact, I think I'd like to talk with you about using that in an upcoming Workbench column.
Oh, so sure.
There you
yeah.
go. You got some FVE credit there coming your way. Hey, I wanted to tell you another story. See if this ever happened to you, where the cleaning crew comes in, and this story was relayed to me by a contract engineer out in the Midwest. And they came in one night and they were looking for a outlet to plug their vacuum cleaner in. See this box in the bottom of the rack with a whole bunch of empty outlets. Turns out it's part of the UPS. They plug the vacuum cleaner in, turn that thing on, and everything goes quiet. I didn't do anything, you know. So I don't know if we've got a picture of this with the safety caps, but this is what the engineer came up with.
I've got a UPS picture if Suncast can find that real quick, but I couldn't find a picture that had the safety caps. But everybody knows these safety caps, they're what you know, they're the childproof caps, right? And they basically say, you know, yeah. So there's an ordinary UPS, and a lot of folks who use a smaller UPS like this, maybe in a control room, you probably wouldn't use this in your rack room, although you might. But it's just something to keep power up for a couple of minutes. It looks like a convenient place to plug a vacuum cleaner in, doesn't it?
It sure does. And with the safety caps, they're round plastic caps that have the two prongs. They plug into any of the unused outlets that you've got there. If you need to get to another outlet, you can pop the cap off. But the point is that the caps keep the outlets from being exposed. And hands that really shouldn't be down there fooling around with things under the console, they'll look for a power source someplace else. So I thought that was a neat idea. The contract engineer, Greg Muir, provided that for Workbench readers.
One thing I might add to that is the picture that you supplied. We couldn't show that picture, but it was just the standard child safety covers for the outlets. I would additionally take a Sharpie marker and write a big the word no.
No.
Although if it was upside down, they might think it said on. That would be bad.
That's good.
Because you wouldn't want the cleaning crew to say, oh, this is a child safety cap. I'm not a child. Let me just plug in here. I want something to say, no, don't use this outlet.
That's a really good idea. It would be a neat idea too. To you were talking earlier about lighting. Add lighting strips. It's the holiday season. Christmas is right around the corner. I couldn't believe went into the drugstore the other day and they've already got Christmas things up. If you're not using LED Christmas lights around your station, you can get these all one color. And the idea is as you see in the picture, it's a string of lights that you can plug in. I've seen these things used in equipment racks. Our friends over at EMF put them inside their racks to be able to light the racks. So when you get inside and you need to see, you're able to see. You don't need a flashlight. They're also pretty neat if you put them under the kickboards of console furniture. It just kind of, especially the blue lights, it's really, really cool. It gives you a very nice a color, sort of a hazy color in the studio, and it's inviting to folks, guests that are coming in, and that sort of thing. So, and Kirk, there was another one that I saw that was really neat. Engineer put a little row of lights. They were green over the transmitter that was on the air. So he had it wired up so when that transmitter went on the air, the lights were green. So when you walked in, you knew exactly which transmitter was on the air. And he did that for his not-so-technical operators so that somebody wouldn't come up and start pushing buttons or doing something they shouldn't to the transmitter that was actually on the air.
Good idea. And I'm glad you mentioned EMF. One of my transmitter sites has a K-Love station at the site. And of course, they've made some nice improvements to the site. We're the beneficiary of those improvements along, of course, with EMF. And one thing that they do is they put those strip lights, those LED strip lights in the back of the rack. And you know that about a half inch place around the rack, the sides and the top, between where the, but it makes the door jam, right? From the sides of the rack to the door jam. You got 5/8 of an inch or so space there in a lot of racks. Well, they put the LED strips top to bottom and across the top in that. So you're never looking at the LEDs straight in your eye. You're never getting that kind of eye strain. But man, you go around the back of the rack and you can see everything, the back of every piece of gear. So you're not going to make a mistake plugging something in or what cable to grab. It's so easy to see. And I thought that is absolute genius. It's they're self-hiding and they light up exactly what you need to see when you put them in an equipment rack like that. And by the way, if you don't feel like dealing with the strip of LEDs like we saw on those reels, you can buy, Christmas rope lights in white. And the benefit of a rope light is you can cinch a cable tie around it if you want to. And the rope light is probably already set up for it may be set up for 110 volts, or it may have a box that offers the ability to have chase lights or, red and green or whatever colors that you want. We got some white ones on our deck here that we turn on every Christmas. But the rope light is kind of cool because it's protected and you can just install it that way. So, John, these are
one
great
other quick thing. I wanted to talk about electrolytic capacitors. I cannot begin to tell you how many emails I've gotten from customers over the last, I guess maybe 2 months ago, we started talking about the need for changing out electrolytics. And
sure.
The bane of every broadcast engineer out. Really important to keep in mind the 7-year rule that if you've got equipment that is older than 7 years and you have not changed those electrolytics, you're going to need to do that. Something that you're going to have to do before the equipment actually dies and takes you off the air or just gives you headaches because they're not working properly. Something that's very important. And I don't know if that was one of the pictures that you had. Yeah, here we go. You can see a good one there on the right. where the top is flat. But one of the things that you'll end up seeing is the end of the electrolytic starting to bow out. And in this case, the two bad ones that are listed there, you can see some of the electrolyte is actually leaking out. That's that black stuff that's there. So very important for you to look at your capacitors. And the best way to do this, shotgun them all, just replace them all. If one is bad, the other ones are going to be following, you know, very, very shortly. So it is important for you to keep a log of equipment, how long you've had it. All equipment suffers from this. So now you might be able to get 10 years out of a piece of equipment, but you might not. And the rule I've always heard has been the 7 years. And after that, you're kind of sort of skating on thin ice. So something for you to keep in mind with regard to your studio.
And if you're a country station that plays classic country, you know the Roseanne Cash song, 7 Year Ache. And there you go. There's your reminder right there.
There you go. That's it. Hey
John.
Kurt, do you have a quick second to talk about the EAS updates that Larry Wilkins
was
talking
about? Let's talk about our friend Hank Landsberg for just a minute, and then we'll make that the very next thing, because it's key. It's key. It's upon us in just a few days, this important update for EAS. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, episode 466 with John Bissett, is brought to you in part by Broadcaster General Store, and they're the representative for the Henry Sportscaster. Now, we had Hank Landsberg on the show not long ago, and he told us a bit about the Sportscaster, how he came about designing it, and what all is in it. And it is absolutely amazing. You can take the Henry Sportscaster, just a one RU box, take it to remotes with you. Take it, of course, it's meant really for sports events, but you could use it for any event where you've got maybe one or two announcers, and then, or even a third announcer, and then you've got maybe a field position. So whether it's a parade, whether it's you're doing a remote from a car dealer, and you've got somebody, hey, up in the hot air balloon, or out on the lot somewhere, or doing a test drive. You can bring that person in too. And there's even the functionality to accommodate a producer, a show producer that can talk to it can talk through IFB, through the headphones, to the announcer, the color person, the spotter, the field reporter, the camera operator. So, you know, so many radio stations now, or cable companies, or even high school and college setups are video, providing a video coverage of their sports events. And the Henry Sportscaster is absolutely ideal to get this done. I mean, I'm so excited about this, because you use the Sportscaster itself, a one RU box, and Hank Landsberg has designed this thing to easily work with the sports pods. These are the boxes that would go in front of each, the announcer, the color announcer, and the spotter. And it's got, you know, buttons that they can mute themselves, turn their mic on and off. They can adjust their headphone volume quite easily. So it's also got mic inputs for a crowd mic. You got a PA announcer and you want to get a clear audio from the PA announcer. Hey, what was the referee's call, for example? You can easily bring that in as well. It does have a built-in program limiter, and you can, of course, send the analog output out to your audio codec or whatever system you're feeding to get this audio to it. Maybe it's a video production system that you're feeding. The Henry Sportscaster has a cue bus, so you can audition auxiliary sources. As I mentioned, it's got a main program output for air or for streaming. The producer headphone also has audio mixing as well. So the producer can adjust his or her audio headphone mix so he or she can hear what's going on. You need to check this thing out. Go to Henry Eng, that's henryeng.com/Sportscaster. And you'll be taken right to the page for the Henry Engineering Sportscaster. There is a technical specification PDF that you can download. You can get that and easily understand this thing in a few minutes. Hey, you can even go back to an earlier webcast of This Week in Radio Tech and look for the Hank Landsberg webcast that we did, that episode. I think it was about 4 or 5 episodes ago. And just, you know, let Henry explain, explain to you how this thing works. Check it out from Broadcaster's General Store. You can easily contact Broadcaster General Store to get you a quote on one of these, or just go ahead and order it. Go to bgs.cc or call them at 352-622-7700. Good people. In fact, I'm going to see them next week I'll be in Ocala, Florida to see the Shute family and the Kirsten family and the other families and some of the pets too. They're at Broadcasters General Store, bgs.cc. Thanks a lot for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. John Bissett is with us as well. And John, you have some key information about EAS. I've been getting emails about this pretty regularly now, reminding me that some stuff has to be done. What is it?
Well, let's start off with, if you are not subscribed to Larry Wilkins' Alabama Broadcasting Association's engineering newsletter, you need to get online and get that. You have to be a resident of Alabama or stationed in Alabama to get this free newsletter. It is really good. Larry has been in broadcasting for years, and he summarizes a lot of information that engineers need to know. One of the things in his most recent newsletter was on the EAS system updates, and he had specific information for Sage owners, also Trilithic and Gorman Redlich and the DASDAQ units. And Kirk, I guess being a little more day-to-day operator as you are with your stations, this update is coming out because there is a change coming, right?
There's a change coming, first of all, in a certificate, an encryption security certificate, right? And so that's one update that I understand, like from Sage, it's at no charge. But then there's another update coming out that Sage is certainly announcing that there's a charge for. I think it's about $400, maybe a bit less. And I'm not sure I've heard from the other the other manufacturers. Let's see. You've provided some notes, and I'll copy your notes and put them in the show notes for this, so we don't necessarily have to go through all the exact software version numbers, right?
And those notes came from Larry's newsletter. So very, very good information there from him. Let me also mention, too, that Larry holds classes down in Alabama. And if you have someone on your staff that needs to learn broadcast engineering or has an interest in it, or maybe you do, maybe you're a jock and you're moving more into the engineering side of things, but you don't really know a whole lot about the engineering, what's going on out of the transmitter site and that sort of thing. These classes run a week. And here's the best part. You just have to get yourself down there. They are free. You provide your room and board, and the class is free for you to be there and learn all about radio as well as television. He has courses on television as well. Just a really, really great resource. And as SVE is moving toward the mentor program and trying to get more younger people that are not the gray-haired folks like me, getting into this business and understanding what broadcasting is all about. The mentor program is just sort of walks hand in hand with the classes that Larry is showing and providing. He'll take you from knowing nothing about engineering to walking out of there and understanding what to touch and what not to touch at a transmitter site.
I also want to second your opinion on the Alabama broadcasters. Two things. They have a Monday morning memo that comes in your email, and Larry Wilkins touches on things that are important and topical. And of course, that's free. And you don't have to be an Alabama broadcaster to get it. Larry puts together important stuff that you need to be on top of. But then there's as you mentioned, the radio and the television classes. I have spoken at some of these. You have too. Jeff Welton from Nautel has spoken, and lots of other engineers. Our colleague, Paul Kriegler was at one a couple of years ago. Lots of great information there. And as you said, there's no charge for these other than you get yourself to Alabama. Typically, they have these in Birmingham, I believe. And I can't get to the site right now, but as soon as I can, we'll put that in the show notes so that people can see. Highly recommended, good stuff. And I would definitely make it a point to try to get there. If you live in the north, you've got the Wisconsin Broadcasters Clinic that we were just at a couple weeks ago. And if you live in the south, Alabama's got a great program too, and it lasts several days.
Good.
You John, you had some one more piece of advice. We've got a picture about it, and that is infrared. We've talked about infrared photography a few times on the show, and I think I've got a picture, and you've got some specific advice about IR photography.
Sure do. And before we jump into that, Kirk, let me mention also from Larry's newsletter, this coming Sunday, you know what happens, right?
Oh, yeah.
Eastern Daylight Time.
We get to sleep an hour longer.
That's right. But a lot of folks have got automatic remote controls, especially on AMs and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget about resetting everything, making sure that everything is all set there. But yeah, with regard to the infrared stuff, this is really pretty cool. The prices have come down just amazingly. And Will, you asked me to come up with a tip for the week, and I think this is going to be the tip for the week.
Oh, well, let's hold that, because we have a bit longer to go before it's time for our tip. Oh, okay. We started a couple minutes late.
I thought we were wrapped up. Okay.
I'm sorry. I should have realized. That's where you put that item. I want to reiterate on this EAS thing that we're going to put this in the show notes. This is critical stuff. There's other places you can get this information, but to make it easy, it'll be in the show notes. So the show will get published typically on Friday or Saturday after we do the show on Thursday. So whether you have a Sage, a DazDeck, a Trilithic, or a Gorman Redlich, there is some information for you about each of these systems, and your EAS has got to be updated. I believe, you know, the update for the certificate is for the CAP system, right? That doesn't affect the over the air stuff. It affects your connection and your authentication with the CAP system. Isn't that right, John?
That is correct.
Okay.
And that's why everybody has got to be up on top of all of this. So it's not something that you can forget about.
Okay. All right. Tell you what, let's hear from our friends at Lavo, and we'll be right back with this, with some cool photography and a good tip about how you can seriously prevent problems, even a fire. And one of my transmitter sites did suffer a fire. Would it have? Had I or other people going to the site had an infrared camera? Maybe. We'll be right back after this.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the jock only uses once in a while. So why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes. And enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavo radio tech at www.lavo.com/twert.
Thanks to Lavo for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech, and the web address is lavo.com/twert. It'll take you right to the radio consoles, and you can bypass all the $500,000 consoles. Just go right to the radio consoles. All right. Thanks again, Lavo. All right. Hey, in our tip section, there's an item that we didn't get to. We'll cover real quickly, and it had to do with muffins and cupcakes. John, would you explain?
Well, how many times have you taken something apart and the screws are laying all over and something happened, you turn away and your arm brushes all the screws and nuts and components onto the floor. Well, here's
John, you asked how many times, and my answer is, excuse my French, every damn time.
The way it is. Well, this tip has been around, and this is one of those that everyone knows it, Kirk, and not everyone knows it. It's a great idea. You grab your girlfriend or wife's muffin tin or mother's muffin tin, and you label each of the muffin holes and put the parts in there as you're starting to undo things. So here we go with a picture. You've got spacers on the first one, some screws on the next one, and then the actual retaining nuts after that. The point is that everything is in a deep hole that is not going to get knocked off. You've got it on the workbench, and you're able to keep track of what's what. And just a great, simple idea. You can go a step further and actually put labels over top of the holes in the muffins, the muffin tins, to say, okay, this is the drive components, or this is from the amplifier, so that you know exactly where things are. And one of the other things, Kirk, that's kind of neat is if it's something that you're taking apart in stages, you can take them apart and put the stages in a muffin cup. When you're putting everything back, you don't end up with parts wondering, gee, I don't know where those went. I thought they went somewhere, but don't know where they are now. So anyway, just a neat idea on using a muffin tin for organizing your parts on the workbench.
I think that is a great, great idea. And I'm going to add one thing to it. So I was buying some kind of parts on Amazon. And you know how great Amazon is about making suggestions about things you might also want to buy, right? Well, how can I be 57 years old and not have heard of Pittsburgh Automotive and their parts, their magnetic parts trays? They're heavy. It won't tip over, at least not easily. It's got a rubber bottom. It's got a powerful magnet in it. And look, if you're watching, it holds these screws and stuff that are in there. And so, I'd probably knock the whole muffin tin over, but I can't knock this over, at least not very easily. And with the magnetic portion in there, they all just stick in there. Now they may become magnetized, that may or may not.
Yeah, even if you did knock it over, the parts would stay inside. That's a really neat
idea.
That's
right. Look, see, they're not leaving.
How much did that cost, Kirk? Do you recall?
It was $7 or $8, maybe $6, maybe $5. It was not expensive at all.
See, there you go.
And actually, I took apart.
You can go ahead and use them.
I had to take apart a Behringer mixer. Oh my God. I had a Behringer mixer with a broken fader on it. This is the one that I use when I do twirt on the road. And it had a broken fader, 147 screws. At least it felt like that to get it apart. Everything had to come apart to get to that fader. And they all fit in here just fine. And they were all magnetically held to the bottom of this. Okay. Hey, we have a hard out time, so we've got about 2 minutes. John, infrared, go.
Let's go. Important. These things are very inexpensive. They're FLIR, FLIR. You can go ahead. There we go. You can get these from FLIR, and I've seen them on eBay for about $279, I think was the lowest price. This plugs into your smartphone. It turns your smartphone into an infrared camera. How is that useful? Well, look at this. You take a picture of your circuit breakers. You take a picture of your transmitter, the components inside your transmitter, of your phaser in your tuning units. The point is that where something gets white is really, really hot, and there's a problem at that point. So when you were talking about saving yourself from the fire, this stuff starts very slowly. And if you're not doing this on like a quarterly or even once or twice a year basis, going through everything in your studio and at the transmitter site, and you can go ahead and keep the film so that you've got the picture to refer back to. But the point is that it will tell you when something is starting to heat up. Another place where it's useful is rigid line. If you have a bullet that is starting to fail or was split and is starting to fail and it's going to take you off the air and burn up some of your line along with it, you'll be able to see it taking a picture of it with the infrared camera. So the fact that these have gotten so inexpensive now, I mean, Kirk, these cameras used to be thousands of dollars. So $279 is a lot of money, but think about the value for insurance purposes, how much your station is going to have to expend if you have a fire at the transmitter site or a fire at the studio or a fire with the electrical panel. So plus the fact you've got lost revenue, you're off the air. $279 is just a great investment. And it's something that, again, you can show your general manager and tell the general manager, I'm saving you money.
And, you know, if you're the suspicious kind, you can come home, take a picture of your bed, and you can see if anybody's been sleeping in my bed. Hey, we got to go. Suncast has to go. We got to go. John, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate your advice. People can follow you at Radio World, your Workbench column, right?
Absolutely. www.radioworld.com and it's Workbench. And thanks again for all of the tips you folks have sent in. We sure do appreciate it. Kirk, thank you.
Right.
It's been my pleasure.
And a big thank you to Suncast, who produces each show. Thanks very much. We'll have the show posted on YouTube. Thanks also to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. I got word from Chris Tobin. He had a little medical thing to attend to with his mom. Everything's okay, though, but he'll be back with us next week, in case you were wondering. Thanks again. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.